Hello there, and welcome to episode number 137 of Blue Jays World Update. I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and let's get you up to date. All right, so don't we have one interesting signing to break down here? That being Justin Turner inking a one-year, $13 million contract with the Blue Jays, which can increase by can increase to $14.5 million with roster and performance bonuses. And before we get going here, before we start to uncover all of the happenings here regarding this recent move, I do have to admit that I had a bit of a mishap earlier today. I spent the afternoon recording an episode outlining all of the factors of this deal. And for whatever reason, technology decided to betray me today, and I lost the episode. It got corrupted. I could not do anything with it. So I'm going to have to start from scratch all over again, which I'm totally thrilled about, which I'm sure you can tell by my tone. I love that I have to completely just start fresh. Anyway, because I have to begin again, this is going to be a shorter episode, not the typical 40 to 50 minute runtime that I usually do, but while I'm going to keep it short, or at least shorter than usual, it's going to be sweet. And we're going to start with the Justin Turner signing here. And like I said off the top, it's interesting. It certainly took me by surprise. I didn't expect the Blue Jays to go this route, particularly when you still had JD Martinez and Jorge Soler still available in free agency. And despite that, the Blue Jays opted to take the path, I don't want to say of least resistant, but least favorable in the eyes of most of their fans. Let me say this first. JD Martinez is a phenomenal hitter, right? One of the most decorated hitters in baseball right now, particularly from a DH standpoint. And Jorge Soler, from a pure power standpoint, is by far, in my opinion, the best available in free agency right now. But it sounds like financials had a lot to do with the Blue Jays going this route and deciding to sign Justin Turner. Probably also had a bit to do with the fact that Bo Bichette did an interview earlier this week with Jeff Blair and mentioned Turner by name as someone he thinks could help this team next season. And from a statistical standpoint, Bo is 100% right. Justin Turner can absolutely make this offense better in 2024. Look at the results alone from what he did last season with the Boston Red Sox. In 146 games, which is impressive for a 38-year-old off the top, right? To play 146 games, even though he spent 98 of those as the DH, it's still impressive to be able to play that many games, that's for sure. On top of that, he hit 23 home runs, a career-high 96 RBIs. He slashed 276, 345, 455, and earned a 114 WRC+. Altogether, he was worth 1.2 Fangraphs wins above replacement. Now, if we compare him to somebody like Bo, because personally, I move as a replacement belt, and if we try and compare the two, it's kind of like apples and oranges a little bit, just because the sample sizes are different, right? Like Turner played 146 games, where Belt played 103. So I'm about to read off the stats that Belt had last season, and a lot of them are better than what Turner produced, but you have to take a bit of have to take them with a bit of a grain of salt, because if Belt were to have played more games last season, he probably would have regressed to the mean a little bit. So, I mean, Belt was still one of the best hitters on Aludé's last season, right? In those 103 games, he hit 19 home runs, drove in 43, slashed 254, 369, 490 with a 138 WRC plus, and was worth 2.3 Fangraphs wins above replacement. And you hear those results and you're like, okay, like, why didn't we just bring back Brandon Belt? Especially because he's a lefty and Turner's a righty, and like, fair. Again, if you were to add 40 more games to Belt's resume, chances are his overall results would have dipped a fair bit and probably looked a little bit closer to Turner's. And another factor here too is you get a bit more versatility with Turner, a little, because he does have prior experience at third base and second base in addition to first base. However, I really don't think we're going to see Turner play third all that much next season, especially because he only played there 7 games last season with the Red Sox, and that was largely because they also had somebody named Rafael Devers on their team. And when you have a player of that caliber, you're probably not going to move him off third base all that much. But in the 7 games that Turner played third base last season, he logged 57 innings and produced a -4 outs above average and a -3 defensive run saved, right? In that limited sample size, he was awful. He was an awful defender at third base last season. So even though the Blue Jays still have a gaping hole at third base with Matt Chapman still the free agent, I really don't see Turner factoring into that equation all that much. I truly believe IKF will occupy the majority of those reps at third base, with Kevin Biggio mixed in there as well against right-handed pitching. I think really we'll see Turner fill in a little bit at second base and largely spell Vladdy at first when he needs some days off his feet. Because defensively, Turner wasn't terrible at first base last season. He nearly posted 300 innings at first and recorded a +3 defensive run saved and an even 0 outs above average. Like, he can be an average defender at first base for you, kind of like how Brandon Belt was. And offensively, Turner strikes out way less than Brandon Belt, or at least he struck out way less than Belt did a season ago. Like, Turner's knowledge of the strike zone is pretty close to impeccable. Like, in 2023, he had a 17.5% whiff rate that ranked in the 91st percentile. His strikeout rate of 17.6 ranked in the 77th percentile. His chase rate in the 71st percentile. Now, he doesn't hit for hard contact. He doesn't barrel up pitches. So his expected numbers are pretty meh. Like, they're just slightly above average. And Turner, despite the fact that he doesn't create much hard contact, Turner's been able to outperform his expected numbers in back-to-back seasons. And a big reason why he's been able to do that is due to his ability to elevate the ball, where he's for the most part of his career, he's generated more fly balls than ground balls. He had a 41.4% fly ball rate last season compared to a 35.7% ground ball rate, also a 22.9% line drive rate. And Turner as well, he plays the gaps really well in the outfield. Of a player of his profile, you would think, okay, like, he hit 23 home runs probably because he pulls a lot of his fly balls. But with Turner, that's not necessarily the case. It's actually the opposite, where a lot of his fly balls are hit to center and right field. Now, his home runs were pulled. Like, of the 23, 21 were hit to the pull side. So, you know, when he really makes contact in the air, it's largely to the pull side. But for the most part, Turner's able to use all three parts of the outfield. And that's a big reason why he's been able to outperform his expected numbers, despite, you know, not being a good hard contact generator. So, you know, do I see this as a move that makes the Blue Jays better? Like, maybe. You know, personally, it doesn't move the needle all that much for me. Like, as if we look at this as Turner being a replacement for Belt, I think this is a move that definitely can make the Blue Jays better. You know, he's somebody that was an above average hitter against right-handed pitching last season, and he also crushed lefties too. So, you know, he's somebody you can use against both lefties and righties next season. And due to his, you know, versatility in the infield, he's not a versatile player, but he can play multiple positions in the infield. So, because he's able to do that, something that Belt couldn't do, when you have those matchups against righties and you want to get somebody else in the DH spot, you could use Turner at first or at second, or, you know, in the rare case, at third base as well. And it's also worth noting too that Turner, you know, despite being 39 years old and the fact that he is an injury risk already, his numbers last season were impacted by a heel issue that he dealt with largely throughout the second half of the season. So, you know, had that not happened, maybe his numbers would have looked even more flashier. And of course, like, the same injury risks are going to apply to him next season too, right? And one of the better ways to try and keep him healthy would be using him as a DH and keeping him off his feet. But, you know, looking back on this move too, like, it's hard not to see it as underwhelming with Martinez and Soler still available, right? Like, this is still a respectable signing for the Blue Jays. But when you have higher ceiling players available, you know, like, it's tough. And that's where I sort of lie as well, where, like, Turner is an impact player for the Blue Jays and will be, and his clubhouse impact will definitely be felt as well. Like, he's a former World Series champion, plenty of years of postseason experience. You know, he's already well regarded by one of the team's star players in Bo Bichette. So I don't think Turner will have any issues adapting to the Blue Jays clubhouse and chemistry. But, you know, it is disappointing to not see them end up with more Soler than Martinez, because Martinez is somebody that would have locked up that DH spot. You know, and Soler could have been somebody that they would have been able to utilize in the outfield, which is still an area of need for the Blue Jays, right? They're still lacking a right-handed outfielder. And that's a move they probably should still make before the start of next season. But Turner alone, when those two guys are still available, it is underwhelming. It is a letdown. But financially, it makes sense for the Blue Jays, right? Like, reportedly, JD Martinez was seeking a deal on a one-year deal of upwards of $20 million or more. And Jorge Soler, he's somebody that has been commanding a three-year contract. And due to his volatility, his age, you know, even though Soler is you know, he generates a ton of hard contact and he's coming off a career season. He's not somebody that I would necessarily want to hand a three-year deal to, even though in terms of an AAV, you could probably sign him at $15 or $16 million per season over three, but that third-year guarantee is something that would scare me. And with the upcoming free agent classes that will, you know, are projected to field here with, you know, next winter's class, including Juan Soto, Alex Bregman, you know, do you want to have a contract, a three-year contract with to Soler on the books after this season when Bichette and Guerrero only have two more years of guaranteed club control? Like, yeah, you know, I would have maybe waited more if I was the Blue Jays, but again, if you wait longer, maybe Turner signs elsewhere. And then you're stuck having to pay either Martinez or Soler. So, you know, I do think there's the potential for this deal to make a lot of sense for the Blue Jays and for it to pan out, but there needs to be more. There needs to be at least one more offensive addition to this team, and like I said, it likely needs to come in the form of a right-handed hitting outfielder who can platoon versus left-handed pitching. Because if you look at this lineup right now, it's in a good spot versus righties. You know, like currently you could have a good lineup of George Springer, Bo Bichette, Vladdy, Turner, and then at third base, IKF or Kevin Biggio, one or the other. You know, Biggio hits sinkers and sliders better, but IKF hits four-seamers and curveballs better. So, you know, matchup-wise, you could deploy them accordingly there. Davis Schneider would be at second base, maybe your number six, number seven hitter. Dalton Varsho would be in the mix. Alejandro Kirk, Danny Jansen, and then Kevin Kiermaier batting ninth. But against lefties, you don't want to have Varsho and Kiermaier in the lineup, right? And Whit Merrifield spelled one of them and was able to play left field last season, but you don't want the go-to option to have to be IKF. And then if IKF's in left field, who's at third base, right? So I do really think the Blue Jays could benefit from adding a right-handed hitter, whether that be Tommy Pham or Adam Duvall or Robbie Grossman in free agency. Via trade, you could look at somebody like Austin Slater, who literally only hit lefties last year and did a really good job of it. Lane Thomas and Washington would be a really solid addition. I've wondered about Taylor Ward out of Los Angeles. Maybe he's somebody that they'd be willing to let go, especially because Joe Adell, one of their highly touted young outfielders, is out of options. And after the team signed Aaron Hicks, he doesn't really have a spot on the team right now. So maybe that's an avenue the Blue Jays could cross later on. But if you pair Turner with that outfield addition, this team looks much better than where it does now currently, right? Because if Turner is the only big move that's left, I mean, you're really putting yourself in a tough spot and relying on the positive regressions of Springer and Vlad and Varsho and Kirk, as well as the continued performance from Bo Bichette, the emergence of Davis Schneider, not to mention the fact that you're heavily relying on that pitching staff staying healthy and as effective as it was a season ago. So I don't want to see this team in a similar position as where it was last year, where you're placing so much pressure on the pitching staff to pitch almost perfectly, where they're operating with next to no margin of error. You know, this team still is lacking sufficient middle of the order thump, And if they were able to go out and add one of those outfielders that I listed, or maybe somebody else, somebody different entirely from that group, then we're having a different conversation here. I mean, even Jorge Polanco, who, you know, unfortunately for the Blue Jays, is now a Seattle Mariner. And you know, it's hard to fault the Blue Jays given the type of package that Seattle had to give up, where they sent two top 30 prospects and a back-end slash multi-inning reliever in addition, or relief pitcher, in addition to Justin Topa, who, you know, because the Mariners have suddenly emerged as a really effective organization at developing high-impact relievers, he's somebody that quietly had a breakout year last season and is now off to join a pretty stacked Minnesota Twins bullpen. And the Mariners sent a bit of cash in the deal too. So from the Blue Jays perspective, there's no way you would have been able to match that type of return. Like, the prospects alone would have been a tall order for the Blue Jays to match. Like, we're talking Alan Rodon and Nate Pearson and Adam Macko, probably. Like, that would be the start of a package that that the Blue Jays would probably have to propose to at least have a chance at matching what Seattle gave the Mariners, or gave the Twins. And when you look at Jorge Polanco, is he even worth giving up that much? Because, like, he's a very seamless fit in Seattle, where they had a wide open second base position that he now fills. But in Toronto, it's like, okay, Polanco is a much better defender at second base than he is third. And the Blue Jays already have a number of different options that they can deploy at second base. They don't really need to be paying an arm and a leg for a guy who is a really effective power hitter and would fit perfectly within the middle of their order, but would be a liability at third base, even though the Blue Jays could bring in a late game defensive replacement to help mitigate any of the miscues that would transpire. But still, it wasn't worth the price of admission from my stance here looking at it. And moving forward, I think it's probably a safe bet to assume that the Blue Jays are going to have to fill that third base, or at least fill those reps that you lost with Matt Chapman internally, right? Having a mixed batch of Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Kevin Biggio, Justin Turner, you know, Addison Barger down the road, maybe Damiano Paul Giamatti could factor in as well, although he would need to be added to the 40-man roster. Ernie Clement even too. There are some options there internally that I think the Blue Jays right now are looking at utilizing in that spot. They could always bring back Matt Chapman, but there's certainly less urgency to do so now, given that you have IKF, you have Justin Turner on the roster, who's going to, you know, probably play less than 10 games at third base, but still would be an option there. If you bring back Matt Chapman at a deal anywhere close to $150 million, it seems a little foolish to spend that kind of money. And as well, too, after the Turner signing, the Blue Jays, they're creeping up on that second luxury tax tier, which is not it's not a major concern, because honestly, the luxury tax penalties aren't all that significant when you cross that second threshold. Like, they're already going to be spending in the tax for a second consecutive year, so they're looking at a 30% surcharge on their overage. And in terms of the second tier, it's only an additional 12% surcharge, right? So it's not until you get to that third tier where you have your top draft pick move back 10 slots. And by no means are the Blue Jays going to be coming anywhere close to that third tier of $277 million. But they would be if they were to sign Matt Chapman, right? Because Matt Chapman's probably looking at $25 million per season, something like that right now, 20 to 25. The Blue Jays' projected luxury tax payroll right now, according to Fangraphs, is at $250.7 million. The second luxury tax tier is at $257 million. If the Blue Jays were to go out and add an outfielder, they're probably crossing that threshold by a few million. They could save some money by trading Santiago Espinal, which to me still seems like a very likely outcome, especially because, like, he's just redundant now. He plays a similar role to IKF. The Blue Jays could certainly reallocate his $2.7 million salary elsewhere. It just makes all the sense in the world to maximize his 3 years of team control remaining. And I honestly would be shocked if he's still on the roster by opening day. Maybe he's still there by spring training, but I would be shocked if he's on the opening day roster in a few months' time. But I do anticipate more moves coming for this team, or at least another move to come. But again, if it's only Justin Turner and no other significant additions, Ross Atkins may have some angry fans with pitchforks at his doorstep, and the calling for his firing would not cool by any means. But again, this isn't still an incomplete picture, even though we're only a few weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training. That's just the nature of this slow pace off season. But you know, in a few weeks' time, if the Blue Jays still haven't added another offensive addition, the heat is certainly going to turn, or is certainly going to intensify on this Blue Jays front office. So we will see what unfolds here. But that'll do it for this week's episode. I hope all of you will join me next time for another edition of Blue Jays World Update. But until that time, I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and now you're up to date. Thanks for listening.